Our first guest is Andrew Pogson. Andrew is the senior manager at Special Projects for the Melbourne Symphony Orchestra. Welcome, Andrew.
Hi, it's great to be here.
And have welcome to our show. Now, as we were just mentioning before, we came back on air again. Now, we just want to have a go. We just want to have a bit of a chat to you, Andrew, firstly, about how you got interested and go back a little bit in time. And how did you get interested in the arts and where did you start off with and what got you going?
Well, I mean, I guess it's how far back should we go? As a very young kid, all of my friends, you know, were in sort of pop music and rock music, but I was actually into jazz and movie scores. So I used to love watching movies, and I would always fast forward the VHS tape, right to the end credits. And so I could hear the music without any sort of movie attached to it, because I didn't realize that you could actually buy records with, that were just the movie music. So I used to do that, and I was into jazz, strangely, and I then learnt the saxophone, and then went through high school and did that whole thing, and then became a saxophonist, a performing jazz musician, studied, went to university, did my master's in performance, and was a performing, working jazz musician for many, many years. And then the lifestyle of the jazz musician, the up late and the home at 4 a.m. and that whole thing, that started getting a little bit tiring. And I decided to see if I could, you know, maybe still stay in the arts, but find something slightly different. So I ended up really by accident at the start getting into orchestras, and I found myself with the Melbourne Symphony Orchestra, programming and producing their non-classical shows. So that's what we call our special projects. So they are things like movie shows, movie scores, video game shows, things with rock and pop artists, and all sorts of different things like that. So it's a really fun, great, I can't believe that I have this job where I get to talk about all of this stuff all day long and, produce and program and direct and, all sorts of things. It's really creative, but it's a lot more sort of during the day, which suits me just fine at the moment.
I think that to be able to blend the beautiful Melbourne Symphony Orchestra with more of contemporary music would just be such an exciting opportunity. I mean, there's so many things you could do. It would be like a kid in a candy shop. We could do this, we could do that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we love to talk about the MSO as being not necessarily a classical orchestra, and of course it is, but also one of the world's largest bands. And so it's just a big band. And so if you think about it that way, the orchestra can be anything. Like you said, the possibilities are endless. And, what I love about the job and being in this industry is that really the sky is the limit. If we can dream up, new ideas and new concepts, as long as, we can perceive of how the orchestra would fit within that, we're pretty much good to go. And that's one of the great joys of doing this, is sort of really trying to push the boundaries into, changing those perceptions of what a symphony orchestra can be, and then ultimately bringing in new audiences, because that's really what it's all about for us, is how can we get new people, young and old, to come and experience live orchestral music and live music in general, because there's so many reasons to stay at home and not come out and enjoy the arts. And I find that getting people out of their houses to come into a concert hall or into a space outside to come and enjoy live music is just a wonderful thing. So,
well, we are blessed. Of course, we have a very, very vibrant live music scene in Melbourne.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that making, giving people the option to engage in many levels of live music, whether it be, local band down at the Tote or coming to see the MSO, I'm so interested by the choice of Star Wars: A Force Awakens.
Yeah, well, we have the it's actually an Australian premiere, but it's also a world exclusive coming up in December. Very excited about this. I'm a massive nerd. I know I look very cool. People can't see me who are listening, but I'm a very nerdy guy, and I'm very excited by this. So we have the Force Awakens, which is Episode 7, and we've got a special version of the movie where the orchestral score has been taken out. still has all the sound effects and the dialogue and audio and all that sort of stuff. And then the orchestra plays the soundtrack live and in sync. And we're going to be playing that 7, 8, 9, 10th of December, which is the week before the new Star Wars comes out. So,
oh, is that right? Well,
you can,
timed.
Yeah, you can sort of refresh your memory in the sort of the most amazing way possible, and then, you know, experience the brand new one the week later. So it's very exciting.
I've always been very attracted to films with live scores.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, I saw at Acme a number of years ago a fantastic, the original version of Faust.
Oh,
and
yeah, right.
Then, and it had a score to it, and it was so entrancing. Mm. Because it was a silent film, so you didn't have to worry about where was the dialogue going to happen. So.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that it's just a magical way of seeing a film, and it just takes it to a whole other level.
Absolutely. I mean, don't you think it's a funny term, the silent film? Because of course they were never silent.
That's right.
You know, they always had you know, an orchestra or a pianist even, often even improvising the scores, you know, and they had a you know, a little phrase that here's our music for the villain and here's our music for the hero, and then playing that live and improvising. So they were never really silent, but yeah, I do love that format.
There are, of course, you know, in Japanese theatre they have a series of different sounds that they could you can easily get educated onto what sounds indicate who is about to enter the room.
Yeah, absolutely.
So there are so many greater sounds to associate with each individual character, or this is the sound the monster makes. Obviously when not doing that this time, but there would be versions in John Williams' music that would be,
absolutely,
you know, obviously indicating portend, you know, something terrible is going to happen.
I mean, that really is the John Williams style, I guess, if we were to boil it down. You know, John Williams is a major composer, probably one of the, you know, the world's greatest film composers. I think it would be hard to say that he wasn't up the top there. And his technique is what is called leitmotif, which is a technique where you assign a melody or a motif or, you know, a certain musical idea, and you assign that to a character or to a place or to an idea, and then every time that it happens on the screen, so for instance in Star Wars, whenever Darth Vader enters the screen, you hear the, you know, the Imperial March, or you hear Darth Vader's theme. And so that is sort of like a musical way of you know, showing the ear that certain characters are coming in. And you'll actually find, and this is a really interesting thing with The Force Awakens that we're going to be performing, is that there's a lot of questions that I don't know the answer to, but there's a lot of questions around, you know, who is Rey's parents? You know, where does this character come from? And there are all of these little potential, you know, clues within John Williams' score. So whenever Rey's on the screen, you hear all these little musical elements that show the Force theme is in there. So she's obviously part of the Force thing. And then you have little elements of Luke's theme and Darth Vader. And there's all these little lineages that come in through the score. And so, you know, perhaps we might be able to work it out before the movie comes out. But that's really the amazing part of John Williams, you know, composing.
So you'd have to have a very good ear, or have heard it many times in order to pick up some of those things. But even if you're not necessarily conscious of it, the music, you would be so much more involved, of course, as a live score. And I mean, then you really can get taken away in an even greater level of escapism, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's probably like, you know, I'm not a filmmaker. You know, I love film, but I would imagine that the same thing is happening with its, you know, with lighting or with angles of the camera, that they're showing certain things about a character by perhaps shooting the character from a little lower so they look taller and more foreboding, and, you know, smaller characters, the camera's a little higher up so they look shorter. I'm the same, you know, you're not necessarily thinking, oh, that's interesting how they did that, but there is a feel that comes through with that, and that's absolutely the same thing with music. You don't have to be a music expert to have these themes come in and feel, you know, like that character is correct, and, you know.
So the music becomes part of the storytelling, basically.
Absolutely, you know, absolutely.
Yeah, just by the type of music and you know, and sound and everything else, and you can make out. It expands on the character, basically, is what you're saying.
Yeah, and what we get with Star Wars, actually, is almost a double hit of nostalgia. We actually have the original Star Wars in 1977 was really a nostalgia film. It wasn't a sci-fi film, per se. It was an adventure film harking back to the golden years of Hollywood and with an older orchestral, you know, score. And because up at that point, movies were using lots of, you know, rock music, pop music, and electronic music, even early electronic music. And so it's a real nostalgia thing. Now we go, you know, forward 40 years, is it now?
Yes.
And, you know, we're almost doing the nostalgia thing again, because now it's nostalgia for me. Mm. Now, when those themes come in, I'm taken all the way back to my childhood, you know, in the 80s, and, you know, hearing all of those old themes again. And it's just like a warm blanket, you know, around you that just feels great. And yeah, so it's sort of this weird double nostalgia. We've been around long enough with Star Wars that's become a thing. So yeah, it's really fun.
We're going to come back and talk about Star Wars again in a minute.
And we're talking to Andrew Pogson about the special Star Wars music, well, the music behind Star Wars, and we're talking about the actual. What the show you're doing, which is The Force Awakens, and that was one of the questions that you had, Fiona.
Well, I mean, I was just curious as to why you chose that particular Star Wars.
Well, it was actually just 100% due to the Last Jedi, you know, episode 8 coming out. Is I thought to myself, well, we could potentially start with the old ones, but here's a really unique opportunity to have the Last Jedi coming out. I'm really pumped about it, and you know, people can come in that week earlier and, you know, just sort of relive that story, so that when they go to the... I'm going to the midnight screening.
That sounds fun. I want to go to that one.
When they head to the midnight screening the following week, you know, it's fresh in their memory. They've heard it in the most deluxe version possible. Mm. So, yeah, that's why we chose it around that way.
And also you'd be able to engage with that younger audience that will have a fond memory. And then you've got the older audience, of course, who would remember that particular one because it has Harrison Ford. And it was the joining of Luke Skywalker and Carrie Fisher's, one of her last films.
Yeah.
She died in 2016.
Well, I believe she's actually going to be in The Last Jedi. So I think that could even be her last film that she ever did. So, I mean, this really is that what would you call it? The passing of the baton between, you know, a certain generation that... You know, the same way that you see mums and dads taking their kids along to The Force Awakens because they grew up with it themselves. Mm. I mean, the same is happening in the film. You see the old crew, the Harrison Ford and you know, Carrie Fisher, really passing the baton on to, Rey and Finn and, you know.
Multi-generational.
Yeah, exactly. So it sort of begs the question, how long is, you know, Star Wars going to, you know, am I going to be talking about it with my grandkids at some point?
That's a nice idea.
Well, actually, is there any kind of, I'm not sure, is there any sort of talk about that, because this is a sort of a one-off type, this next one that's coming out. It doesn't form part of the next series or anything, does it?
No, it does. So Last Jedi is episode 8. It'll be the second of the, I guess, the next trilogy. So we go to episode 9 eventually.
Yep.
And they just announced a new trilogy that will come out, obviously, in quite a few years' time now, but 10, 11, 12. So this is going to be continuing on for quite some time now.
I wasn't aware of that one, so yeah. Goodness me.
Yeah, yeah. There'll be a dozen soon. And then we'll have a baker's dozen.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I know there is a talk as well involved where three film score experts, yourself included, will be talking about the creation of the work that goes into putting together the score, and also the secret to how the MSO syncs with the film.
Yeah, well, I'll get to that in one second, but before each concert we are going to be doing a live podcast
before each one,
before every single show. So about an hour and 15 before each concert time, we'll be doing I run a podcast called Art of the Score, where we explore soundtracks of TV and film and video games, and we show how they work, and we talk about, you know, all the different motifs and melodies. And then we're going to be doing that live. And really exciting part about this is my two collaborators, the conductor Nicholas Buck, who is actually going to be the conductor for the show itself.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very unusual to have the conductor of the actual show come out and do a pre-concert talk.
Absolutely.
And also the third in our party is a fairly well-known film lecturer, university lecturer from Melbourne, called Dr. Dan Golding. And the three of us sort of take our various, you know, expertise and different aspects on film music, and we sort of break everything down, but we keep it really fun. So you don't need to, you know, be a musician to sort of get into it. However, we like to also think that if you are a musician, you are really into this, there's still stuff for you to learn. So yeah, we'll be doing those before every single concert. But you asked the question about the sync. Yeah, how does the orchestra sync to the film? This is my favourite part. There is actually a secret monitor that the conductor has in front of him, and it has a whole bunch of information on it that no one else sees. And it includes things like what we call streamers. So these are like strips of colour that are like traffic lights, red, orange, and green. And they go across the screen at a certain speed, and when they get to the far right of the screen, that means a new section is starting.
Mm.
Now, really, the big question is, how do you get the tempo, how fast the beat is? And the way that happens is actually a digital version of an old Hollywood technique. So back in the Hollywood days, where they actually, heaven forbid, used real film, film, you would have 24 frames of film a second.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll get some maths here. and let's say that you wanted to beat every second. That keeps the maths easy. So every 24 frames of film, they would get a hole punch, and they would punch a hole in the film, and some poor, probably, you know, student would be stuck doing that. But then when they played the movie up on the wall behind the orchestra in the scoring stage where they were recording everything, a flash of light would come up on the wall. So it'd be playing the film, and then this flash of light would come up as it shone through the hole punched piece of film. And that flash would make a visual beat. So it would be flash, 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 flash. And now we have a tempo that keeps everything
lovely
in sync.
Yeah.
So with the conductor, he has a visual version of that. So he has this big white dot, I guess, that comes up on the screen and flashes in that same way. So it's really old technology combined with really new technology. And, of course, the really amazing part with the Melbourne Symphony Orchestra doing this is that normally these scores were recorded over, you know, weeks where they had lots of breaks and all this other stuff, whereas the orchestra is going to be doing it live. And so you've got sort of 2.5 hours of intense concentration, you know, just to sort of try and keep up. And of course, if Nick, the conductor, gets out of time, then he's in trouble. So he's always really amazing, but it's sort of like the closest I've ever seen of orchestra combined with sport, you know, seeing all of this unravel. So, yeah.
And of course, everyone has to work together. This, you know, it's really an extraordinary piece of.
It's a spectacle.
Extraordinary piece of human engineering.
Yes, it is. And, you know, there's 90 musicians on stage, a conductor, all these people out the back who are making everything run as well. And it's an amazing, you know, there's 100 people involved in bringing this.
90 musicians on stage.
Yeah,
that is
huge.
A spectacular, for sure.
Yeah.
Wow. Exciting.
That sounds fantastic, actually. And with the music and everything and the movie behind it, I think that's definitely worth going. Mm. So now, Andrew, where are you playing?
We are at the Palais down in St Kilda, the newly refurbished Palais.
So many beautiful... I mean, of course, I've only seen the exterior. I love the new colour.
Yeah.
But I have heard that it is really stunning in there.
It's gorgeous. We went in just before it opened just to do our sort of... our planning. And yeah, it's really beautifully done up inside. It's really comfortable, but it still has that old world charm to it. So they haven't sort of modernized everything. Mm. They've just given it, you know, repaired everything, given a new coat of paint, new carpeting, and it's really, really gorgeous in there. And it should be just a sort of a perfect place to view this.
And it's not a 70mm screen, is it, that they have there?
Oh, we'll be using digital projection, but we'll have a massive screen. I mean, I think it's probably 15 metres wide.
Wow.
Okay. It's really huge. So that sort of sits over the top of the orchestra.
Mm.
It's about as wide as it can be. I mean, the Palais used to be a cinema back in the day, and so it's actually set up for film. So it sort of feels like a proper old-style, you know, film theatre. It works really beautifully.
Okay, and when is it on, Andrew?
The dates are the 7th, 8th, 9th and 10th of December. Now, the 10th is a Sunday and it's a matinee, that one. So we actually also have a little bit of, you know, family activities before that one. We have Padawan training on before the show. So we're going to have all of these, Jedis dressed up in their robes and their lightsabers, and you can bring your kids.
Oh, cute.
And you can dress them in robes and lightsabers, and they teach them how to do moves.
And is it there? You can have a selfie with the stormtrooper.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of... We're We've got characters coming. You should come dressed yourself, of course, if that's your thing. And we'll have character statues there with costumes that have been from the film. Mm-hmm. So that's really cool. You can get your photos with that. There's going to be a cantina band in the foyer. So, yeah, we're going to have a band playing Star Wars cantina music while you get your drinks.
So kooky. I just love that. I just love that bar.
Yeah.
I want to go to that bar.
Yeah, exactly. So it's going to be like a really immersive experience. It's not just a scene in the film. It's coming down, you know, nerding out, having a fan day, fan evening where, you know, everything that you do is sort of immersed in the world of Star Wars. So,
and, yeah. And spanning generations too, because obviously you bring the next generation along.
Exactly.
Start preparing for the next lot of the next trilogy, basically.
Well, that sounds like a fabulous event.
That sounds great. So I'm assuming you can just go to the MSO website for tickets.
Yeah, MSO website, MSO.com.au/movies is probably the easiest way to find it. Mm. And yeah, all of the information is there, including the activities around each show. And tickets are on sale.
Wow, John.
Thank you very much, Andrew, and good luck with the show.
Thank you very much.
You're here on Sunday Arts Magazine on Joy 94.9.